When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Let's talk.
John Brown.
The Roma. A travelling history. It's a profoundly personal portrait of a people and their ongoing journey, shedding new lights on the history of the Roma and what it means to be a Romani in Europe today. I am delighted to say, and I've been looking forward to doing this interview all week, that I'm joined live on the line by Madeline Potter, author of The Roma. Madeline, good morning to you.
Good morning. Hi, thank you for having me.
Pleasure's all mine. Whereabouts are you, by the way?
I'm in Edinburgh at the moment.
Blimey. Okay, fair enough. up in Scotland. Now, for those, let's cut to the quick and get on with it, because the Roma, I mean, I was lucky enough to, a couple of years ago, to interview a member of the Roma, and he opened my eyes, if you like, to the community, and also he told me that I'm one of the gorgeous, which I thought was, well, you know, I was looking particularly handsome that morning, but just explain why those who aren't members of the Roma are referred to as the gorgeous.
Yeah, so the gorgeous is a term that the English-speaking Romanis tend to use. Yeah. We tend to call them gajos or gaje.
Yeah.
But if, as you can hear phonetically, it's quite similar. It's the same word that's just slightly pronounced slightly differently. It's just a word used to refer to people who aren't Romani.
Yeah.
It can refer to people who just are not Romani at all, but it can also refer to Romani people, interestingly, who have been, say, banished by the community or who've done something that then makes them no longer Romani. So it means you're an outsider to the Romani community itself.
Now, I, as you know, I'm based in Spain, and we have... Obviously, there are a large, well, we would call them gitanos over this part of the world, Granada, Cordoba, yeah. Sevilla. It's very much, Cadiz and people like Cameron de la Isla, who is gitano, Pablo Lucia, the great musicians, the great singer. I mean, the influence of gitanos, but there's a really interesting level between those who consider themselves as Spaniards, i.e., you know, of that Christian stock, and let's not even get going on about the Al-Andalus, but also and the relationship between them and how they are held up culturally, but then looked down from a social perspective. But also, the journey of the Romani from if you like. Northwest India, that sort of reason. I mean, just explain. I've put so much into that. Sorry, Madeline, but just explain sort of the journey and the origins, if you like.
Yeah, so the Roma originated in India, in northern India, what is today roughly Rajasthan, Pakistan region. We don't have a lot of written data about when the Roma were in India and about the migration. That's partly because the Roma tend to have an oral culture. So we tend to carry our songs, our tales with us. But we do know, because of linguistic studies, that the Romani language is an Indian language, right? It's related to Hindi. Yeah. So that has traced us back to northern India. It's quite likely that we are descended from a caste of traveling musicians whose descendants are still around in India today, called the Dharma. And then they migrated westward. Exactly why is unclear. There are various theories. One is to do with the invasion of India. Others are to do with simply wanting to escape the caste system. But we know that they started migrating westward, eventually got to Eastern Europe around the 13th century, and then kept moving westward. So when we get to Western Europe, it's roughly early modern period.
And so, I mean, the story, I mean, of the, I mean, you think about, I mean, it's nothing. Here's the thing, and this is completely off the top of my bald head, but so Romania, for example, that's not taking its name from...
It's a coincidence. Yeah. It's a coincidence. It does create a lot of confusion. Yeah. But no, Romania takes its name from Rome because Romanians speak Romance language, yeah. Whereas Romani just stems from Rom means man or husband, right, in the Romani language. So it's just a coincidence.
And then is there sort of a split? Because a lot of you know, Romani stay in central sort of Europe, but a lot do make their way over to the Iberian Peninsula and that southern France thing. Think Gypsy Kings people, and you're kind of thinking, mm-hmm, what I'm saying. So, I mean, why is it, you know, culture that basically keeps moving and you know, until it sort of hits the, basically, as far as they can kind of go?
It does, yeah, exactly, because the Roma were traditionally a nomadic, yeah, community. So even today, there are different tribes, there are different subgroups, so each of them would have their own sort of travelling routes. So some of them keep traveling. Obviously, in each country where they stop, there are various measures. In Romania, they were enslaved quite soon after arriving. Mm. As they moved westwards, there were various measures that were meant to just banish them from the country, to push them out. So some of the migration happens in response to trying to evade persecution, and some of it happens just due to upholding the nomadic lifestyle, moving on. The routes sometimes tend to take communities to different places during the summer and during the winter. There are all these various migration routes depending on the tribe, depending on the family. But yeah, the ones who get to south of France then get to the Iberian Peninsula. Mm. And there is this really big community of Gitanos in Andalusia, just in the south of Spain more broadly, yeah, but also around Spain, Barcelona. I mean, Carmen Amaya, the famous flamenco dancer, was from Barcelona.
Yeah, I just find it funny, a very good friend of mine who's Gujarat, she came over and she stayed for a couple of days in Triana, which is Sevilla, and yes, she said to me, I couldn't believe it, everybody was speaking to me in Spanish.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And I write in my book, I write about Triana and about me going to try and find some grassroots flamenco there.
Oh, right.
It's absolutely wonderful. And without spoiling it, I do find it. So.
Strangely enough. Here's the thing, though, okay, because there are two sides on this. Because on the one side, right, this is a free-spirited, independent people, yeah? In a world where we're told, you know, we must be against big government, all that sort of thing. The Roma, you know, the Roma have it. That's the whole thing. And they should be welcome for that. And on one side, they're romanticized. So you have brightly colored caravans and the whole thing and the dashing, you know, gypsy girls, etc. I mean, they're even in a Bond film, for goodness sake. And, yeah, you know, and we've got the art and that whole thing. And then on the other side, we have the, you have to look at the way that people look at the, you know, the Irish travelling community, for example, and they get, mm-hmm, it in the neck, and you know, it's that whole, you, yeah, know, even Guy Ritchie didn't do them any much favours either. But they're seen as the ultimate outsiders. They're seen as, yeah, promiscuous. They're seen as you know, thieving. I mean, just everything. And, yeah, you know, and there is an incredibly dark side before we even go into what happened, you know, during from 1930s, you know, Central Europe onwards, what happened to the Roma there?
Of course, yeah. No, absolutely. There is a very interesting mix of romanticization, of fetishization, of absorbing and looking at the beauty of Romani culture, but they're not really understanding it. So it's caught between this sense of rendering them outsiders, but also being fascinated. I mean, I write in my book about, for example, the famous French poet Charles Baudelaire, essentially just staring at a group of traveling Romani people, especially at the women, of course, and romanticizing their vision at a time that's right before, as you say, things go very, very wrong in the 20th century. I think there is a fascination with the idea of nomadism. I think there is a fascination with the idea of not being pinned down by society's rules. I think there is a fascination with the aesthetic. And it's true that Romani culture is a culture that very much values expressions of aesthetics.
Yeah.
Opulent expression. We're a very colourful culture. For example, red is considered a lucky colour, and for a long time, brides used to wear red rather than the traditional wedding dress because it's lucky. But on the other hand, it's misguided to say that we live outside of society's norms, because actually traditional Romani culture has very, very strict rules about pretty much everything that you do. You know, it's a kind of pure impure distinction that governs every aspect of Romani life. So
yeah, and this is the thing, because you know, in the world, especially it's happening here as well, but especially in Northern Europe, where the family is sort of split up as a region, you know, and you know you don't see your aunts and uncles, you know, family don't live in the same place. Whereas in Roma culture, absolutely, family is as it is with Gitano culture. Same thing. It's first and foremost.
100%. It's such an important aspect of Romani life. Just family, because I mean, obviously, to a certain extent, modern life has tended to separate people, I think. But you are absolutely right. I think when you are traditionally a nomadic community, your home is not a house in brick and mortar, but it's the community, the people, the family. That's who you're surrounded by. That's where you get meaning from, and that's where you get solace from. So family is absolutely crucial to Romani communities. And
how does
tend to be quite close knit?
I mean, presumably, education, for example. I mean, there is a certain amount of traveling, but presumably education up to an age must be. Is it problematic, or do the Romani now sort of base themselves relatively around one area so that kids can go to school, etc.?
It depends. Today, the vast majority of Romani people are settled. In Romania, where I grew up, even the memory of nomadism, as I say in my book, has pretty much eroded. So the fact that they were traditionally nomadic doesn't pose a particular problem to education, but there are other problems that might come in, which is to do with exclusion from mainstream education, with systemic racism, with gender norms as well within traditional communities. But that problem has sometimes arisen. For example, in Sweden, it was a big problem because for a long time, the Roma were excluded from mainstream education. And there were campaigners for the rights of Romani people to get educated, such as Johann Dimitri Tycon and Katarina Tycon, whom I write about. And the state, the National Board of Education, kept saying, right, but the communities move around, so how do we tackle that problem? So there were loads of proposals. For example, Romani kids could attend school within the area that they were camped out for in a given time. Mobile schools were trialed as well. And eventually they were just integrated into the mainstream system of education. But it was a whole process that led to the formation of Romani rights activism in Sweden, really.
Yeah. And the other thing is, I mean, we talked about it before, but the outright hostility, because, you know, it is racism. You could not get away with calling half, you know, something to a, or portraying, for example, you couldn't portray an Afro-Caribbean in the UK now as a stereotype. And yet, you were living in Romania as well. And when you had Romanians coming over, they were all personified as Romani, and it was seemed to be fair game. You know, social media, for example, which is a bloody double-edged sort of ever there was one, was saying, you know, here come quote unquote the thieving, you know, this, that, and the other. I mean, that, and you couldn't get away with any other group, could you? But yet, and yet, with the Romani culture, it seems to be fair game.
Yeah, I've heard people call it the last acceptable form of racism. Mm. And I think that's a relatively accurate way of describing it. I think just publicly, there is still this comfort for people to make these judgments and these stereotypical assumptions about Romani people. And you're right that I think there's been a degree to which the whole of Romania has been painted with that particular brush. But at the same time, it's led to further racism within Romanian settings as well, with non-Romani Romanians saying, well, no, it's not us, it is the Roma. So kind of a sense of punching down and then essentially just further blaming Romani people. And these are systems which are sometimes replicated in the UK as well, within the interactions between non-Romani people from Romania and Romani people from Romania.
And it's a circle you need to break, because people say, oh well, they're not very friendly to us. Well, you wouldn't be, and a family is important, and you need to be a certain person to be able to get into that family. You don't just rock up to a Romani, you know, where the Romani go, hi, you know, you have to gain the trust. And so therefore, but the other thing is, in fact, because you can't, it's the thing, because you can't get a job in normal circumstances. Not that you want a job. There's a great quote from, I think it's probably the 18th and 19th century, about Romani, you know, gitanos in Granada, and this is the time when Carmen is setting the world alike opera-wise, and again, another romanticized vision, you know.
I write about Carmen in my book,
right?
Yes.
and she says the fact that, you know, they're looked down on, except that when the upwardly mobile inhabitants of Granada have parties, they get gitanos into play from Sacromonte, and they get them into play, and they are welcome in their houses then, but as soon as it's finished, they're kicked out, apparently, you know, packed out on the streets, although, you know, the women can stay a bit longer. I mean, it's just
absolutely taking us back to that sense of fetishization and
stuff,
exclusion the same time. Exclusion meaning a lot of things.
When it comes to writing this book, though, I mean, it's a celebration. It's a celebration of culture, but there's some pretty, I mean, there are some, you know, there are some horrendously dark bits in this. I mean, we are now, this is the liberation of the camps 80 years ago. And, you know, the Romani culture was all very nearly snuffed out.
Yes, there are some really, really dark passages. There are some really dark explorations in this book, and I think it's very difficult to tell the history of the Roma without including those very dark moments, because it has been a history, unfortunately, marked by persecution, by genocide, by enslavement, by extreme violence. But at the same time, I think what I was really keen to do in the book is to show the resilience, to show the survival, because ultimately we are still here. And ultimately we've come through these very dark moments still as a community. I think it was a question of me showing the survival, not just in terms of people surviving, but in terms of the culture surviving as well.
You said it's an oral history, so presumably to when you look back and you're charting the course, I mean, it must be, you are relying on tales that have been passed down, so you must have spent an awful lot of time taping or recording and transcribing to get this in a sort of a coherent narrative.
Yes, absolutely. So Romani culture is very much an oral culture. Yeah. I tap into tales that I have heard growing up, stories that have been told to me by my family, by my community, tales that me and other Romani children heard and were fascinated by and that stuck with us. And also, because Romani culture is so diverse, the Roma aren't just one big thing, right? You mentioned the Gitanos in Spain, and they're one subgroup. They're just one clan. They're just one Yeah. But then I'm Calderash, which is quite different. And then in Bristol,
what's Calderash? He said, what's Calderash? He said excitedly. Come on, what's Calderash?
Calderash are traditional coppersmiths.
Right. Okay.
And they're one of the biggest tribes of the Romani people, found primarily in the Balkans.
Right.
And there are many, many tribes. The Romanichal, or the Romani gypsies, are the ones that we tend to find in Britain.
Right.
The Sinti in Germany and Central Europe, the Lovara in Hungary. And each of these groups tend to have their own stories. So I spent some time, obviously, telling the stories that I heard growing up, but then also looking into stories from other tribes. So, for example, Johann Dimitri Tycon, whom I mentioned in terms of in connection to Romani activism in Sweden, he was also a tremendous storyteller, and he collaborated with an ethnologist to produce a collection of some of the Romani tales that he knew. And he was illiterate. He couldn't read or write.
Yeah.
So they were transcribed and then they were published. So I was looking at those collections of tales as well to try and bring to life the various tales of the various groups as well.
It's an interesting though, because we go sort of, everybody gets glued to these natural histories about, tribes in Africa or tribes in wherever in, around the world in the Amazon. And yet here is a nomadic tribe that is in Central Europe that has a variety of, has an incredible cultural history and is on our doorstep. And yet we look down on them.
Yes, and that's exactly what I was trying to bring to light. I was trying to bring to light that specificity of these traditions that have been overlooked for so long, even though, as I mentioned, we have been part of a European landscape since the Eastern Europe and Middle Ages and Western Europe, early modern period.
Yeah.
So I was trying to bring that to life and also just bring to life that diversity and variety.
And it's a geographical journey as well. It goes from,
yes,
Romania through to Edinburgh, which is that's a journey and a half. I mean, you're walking in the footsteps of your ancestors on this one, then aren't you? That must have a huge pull when you're writing about it.
It does. So the traveling history obviously references the history of the nomadism that has defined Romani communities, but it also references my own personal journey. I begin in Britain, where I live now, and then go to Romania, where I was born and grew up, and then trace it back all the way back to Britain through a series of countries, including Germany, Spain, the USA, Sweden. So it very much is trying to retrace that geographic and symbolic journey of my ancestors and trying to find my own voice within the tapestry of Romani history and culture.
And people presumably want to tell you these stories. They want this to be written down because they want it to be celebrated and they want this culture to be discovered.
Yes, absolutely. We want the culture to be discovered.
So what are you hoping then that people will take? It's that there is not one bunch of quote unquote gypsies, gitanas, call them what you will. As you said, they are, if you like, the Roma have been around for centuries, and they've always been airbrushed out.
Yes, exactly. So I want people to leave this book knowing who we are, knowing more about who we are. To move beyond that push and pull between romanticization and exclusion, and to really understand the stories, the voices, the history of Romani people across Europe and North America by focusing on that human side of history as well.
The book is called The Roma, A Travelling History. It's by Madeline Potter, who's speaking today. Listeners, you can order it by going to our own virtual bookstore. There's a photograph. It's a brilliant front cover. And you click on that and it will send the book to you. Are you on the social media? Can people find you online? Is there a Roma Instagram? Please tell me there is, Madeline. Please tell me you're on the Instagram.
I am on Twitter, well, X. And Instagram at Madeline_CCT.
Madeline CCT.
Madeline_CCT.
Wonderful. Well, listen, yeah, it's been absolutely brilliant to speak to you. The book is called The Roma, A Travelling History. It's by Madeline Potter. Madeline, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure.